Oh, hello to everyone out there. Oh, I have to do it one more time. Good afternoon. It's a good. I wish I had David home to help me get my tie. And the thought for the week, as we were looking at it earlier, mentions that there is peace and comfort when we obey God, even in the midst of Satan's world. You know, there's a scripture, and I'm going to butcher it, and I didn't write this one down, but it mentions that even people who unknowingly do God's ways are blessed. And so that shows how powerful God's laws are, that if we will do them, if we will choose to do them, then we obviously are going to help with our own blessings and those around us. Because if people unwillingly do it and they're blessed by it and they see successes, then we can know that we will too. The title, again, if you noticed, is Mental Health. And you might say, well, what is this? Is this some kind of a doctor, psychology sermon here? What are we talking about? This happens to be Mental Health Week. Or actually Mental Health Month. The month of May is Mental Health Awareness Month in the United States, maybe in the world, I'm not sure. You know, what does that exactly mean? What are we talking about? Mental health, you know. And, you know, as we listen to the songs that we sing, blessed and happy is he, and those types of things, and we talk about happiness, and we talk about, but, you know, we often find ourselves not happy. And so we can pretend, I guess, if you want to, that, you know, if we just follow God, we'll just be happy. Well, that's great. And it's true if we could do it perfectly. And the promise is there and the hope to keep us moving in that direction that we're growing in happiness. But have you ever met anyone who was happy all the time? And so sometimes those of us, or you, I can't say us because I'm not one of those people, but sometimes we tend to put on this face of happiness, or we see people who put on this face of happiness. We read those scriptures like, whoa, blessed and happy is he. And we kind of think, boy, everybody in the church is just happy except me. I have depression. I have anxiety. I have problems and difficulties. And sometimes we can tend to feel like maybe we're a lesser Christian because we don't have it all together, or we're not able to ignore or not deal with our problems the same way that somebody else does. Have you ever seen people who seemingly just walk through life on a cloud and never, you know, something hits them and it never really bothers them? They say, well, that's just the way it is, or they have some kind of one-off phrase that they use, you know, that's just the way the cookie crumbles, or that's just, you know, whatever it is. Is it possible to continue through life in that way and to develop and have meaningful relationships? You know, if we continue through life saying, well, that's just the way the cookie crumbles, how much compassion do we have for someone who's not able to say that's just the way the cookie crumbles? Or for somebody whose cookie got crumbled and stomped and kicked and then the dog ate it. You know, we have to find that balance of compassion. And while we are resilient, and God may bless you more than he blesses me for some reason. Maybe I need more of a lesson. Maybe I need more teaching. Or maybe you can't handle the things that I can handle. I can't handle the things that you can handle. And God, you know, obviously looks at us from different points of view. While he expects the same thing from us, he doesn't expect the same thing necessarily at the same time or in the same way. And you're being prepared for a job that I may not be being prepared for, and vice versa. So mental health becomes a very important issue, not just in the world, and we find that in our world, in our society, mental health is just becoming such a talked about topic. We have a whole month that's set aside for mental health awareness. Yet, the world's look at mental health and our look at mental health is somewhat different. I wonder if you have stopped to consider the impact of your own youth, where you came from. You know, your accent is different than mine. Mr. Knott, living out in California, and of course I know he's not from California, but I'm sure he gets to hear, he doesn't hear this kind of language like we talk here. He says, wow, those people sound like they're from Tennessee. Yep, we do. I had a cousin one time, it's funny, she thought she sounded like us. She's from Indiana. She talks, you know, real northern. I can't even try to do it. Real northern. And she came into Walmart and ordered some chicken or something at the deli. And somebody said, you're not from here, are you? And she said, what? They say I'm not from here? She said, I sound like you guys. And Beverly got a kick out of that and laughed because she doesn't sound anything like us. You know, those are they're things that go into your mind that cause you to speak and say things a certain way. You ever stop to consider that? Your accent, just who you are and how you approach different situations and how you look at things, your point of view. There's a movie that I watched some time back, very interesting idea, and it's called Vantage Point. Anyone ever seen the movie Vantage Point? It was about a presidential assassination. And the way they did the movie was they started out and they show this president steps up on the stage. There's a shooter up in a window. He takes a shot at the president, shoots the president. Well, it goes through this whole scenario of how this all lays out. And then it rewinds and it shows it from another person's point of view who was there and saw this whole episode unfold. So you go through it from their point of view. Then it rewinds. And it goes through it from another person's point of view, and you have to see all of the points of view before you can understand what actually happened. It's a very interesting idea and a well-done movie. It's several years old. But your influences, your friends, your family, your religion, your school, the location that you grew up. Who would you be? Who would you be had you grown up in, say, the Middle East? Who would you be, say, you had grown up in California, Canada? Who would you be? Who would you be if you'd grown up in a single-parent home? Maybe single mother was who raised you. What about if it was a single father? Or what if maybe both of your parents died at an early age and you grew up with grandparents? And all of these different influences and all of these different things that go into us and into our minds and make us who we are, we see we bring those with us when we make this commitment that we've made to follow through with God's way of life. And because we punch the clock and say, I'm going to take this baptism and I'm going to ask God for His Holy Spirit, well, we don't get to leave all of that stuff and become a different person. We don't change countries and move to a different area, and all of a sudden we're a citizen of a new place, and everything we've had in us, we lose and we forget. God doesn't erase our memories and our minds of the tragedies and the situations that we've seen. And so here we come, a new Christian, just fresh, a babe in Christ, if we will, who has been given just a portion of God's Spirit, yet we carry all of our mental thoughts, ideas with us when we step into that place. And so that, in essence, is really just the beginning of us trying to figure out who we're supposed to be versus who we are. Now, God doesn't say, okay, stop talking like a Southerner and you know, those things are okay. And yet, at the same time, certain things that go with that may not be okay. And we realize that how we eat, the types of foods that we eat, you know, we're being trained as we grow up. How many sodas can I have a day? Or how much candy is okay? Or, you know, do we eat pork chops or not pork chops? How many fried foods do we have a week? And all of these things become habits that at some point in time, we have to look at and go, how am I going to do this. I, as an adult, maybe it's 25. Maybe I say, okay, I'm going to be my own man now. Now, how do I eat? But if I don't stop and realize and recognize that I've created these habits, that these habits have been created in me by repetition, then how do I know what's okay and what's not? How do I know what's good for me and what's bad for me? Because we all kind of think that our way was the best. How we were brought up, well, that's kind of the way we like it. You know, nobody cooks like grandma. Nobody cooks like mom. Or Aunt Anna, for that matter. It's what we get used to. And we don't really mean any harm by that. Sorry, Trisha, I'm just picking on you there. We don't mean any harm by that, but it's what we get used to, and it becomes what we like. And so what tastes good to someone, somebody else says, ooh, that's horrible. That's awful. Well, I wouldn't eat that. You know, and we look at different cultures and what they've grown up in and what they eat and how they handle things. And we say, no way. There's no way I would touch that. But they sit there, you know, eating a dog or whatever, and like it's the best thing in the world. Laneland has a couple of kids in her class who are Muslim. And in some of the projects that they do, one of the projects that she had to do this week was to create a civilization. She had to come up with her own civilization. What was it going to be like? She had to name towns. And what laws would they go by? And how would they handle different situations? And what inventions would they have? And, of course, these two kids had references, strong references to Allah and to the Muslim religion. They were strong. These kids who were sixth grade are already committed to their religion. That's what they've been taught. That's what they've been raised to be. And if God were to call them for some reason in this time, they're going to bring all that history and past with them. Some good, some bad. And sometimes we know what to lay down, and sometimes we don't. Sometimes we think, okay, well, we lay down this, this, and this, but we forget about all the other little things that we didn't lay down. This is the challenge. As Mr. Knott covered this scripture here, Romans 7 and verse 21, we find that Paul had the same problem. Paul, who was way up on the list as far as important people that have ever lived and in God's plan, Paul says, I find then a law, in verse 21, that evil is present with me, the one who wills to do good. So he still has this evil in him. Now, if he was fully God, and when we're converted to be gods, we won't have all of that to contend with. But he says in verse 22, for I delight in the law of God according to the inward man. Verse 23, but I see another law in my members, warring against the law of my mind and bringing me into captivity to the law of sin, which is in my members. Boy, don't he sound like blessed and happy is me? That don't sound like it. He's always that way. Yet, that's the promise. The promise is sometimes afar off. And so that's the promise is, and God says, you will be blessed. You will be happy. And so as we choose right, we may be happy in this area. But over here, we have a struggle. And our struggle may be this. And we may say, well, I can deal with this on my own. This is between me and God. Where someone else's struggle tends to be more out in the open. It's obvious. My wife just left me, you know, or my child just died, or my this happened or that happened. And so where maybe my struggle may be quiet, silent, and I don't have to show it, someone else's is right out in the wide open. And so we all have these different things to deal with. So this is our fight, like Paul, that we want to learn how to think. Learning how to think. As we think, so we are. As we think, so we are. Why? Because our spirit, the spirit is something in the mind, isn't it? And so as we learn to control our thinking, as we learn to change our thinking, it changes us and can in turn change our actions. If we realize, you know, something that I've had to do recently with high blood pressure, getting my blood pressure getting up a little. I said, I have to change. First, I had to change. I had to decide. And it was a hard decision. It took time and time. I had to decide. I've got to change my diet. I didn't want to, but I had to. So then as I changed my mind, then the body seems to follow. But, you know, I actually changed my mind a long time before. I don't really want to do this. Then there's the struggle of what I want to do versus what I do. And then you kind of have to get the two lined up together. You know, I mentioned it, May is mental health month, but to God, it's mental health year after year after year after year, because that's His concern. It's how we think. God is in the business of changing our minds and helping us to change our minds. Do any of you have great mental health? Would anyone be bold enough to raise their hand and say, I have wonderful mental health? Probably not, because you know as soon as you did, some trial, some challenge will come and test you to the core of your being, that what you thought you could withstand. And when we sometimes look at other people and we think, well, I think I could handle that, we wonder if we really could when it comes down to it. It's interesting, we get the examples of all the apostles, and probably for good, you know, to keep us humble and to keep our minds in check when we see what kind of deaths that they suffered and the persecution that they suffered. We realize we're just not quite, we're not mentally capable of handling all of these difficulties that these guys had to go through. And it keeps us in check when we see other people struggle, when we witness other people's problems. Philippians 4. Philippians chapter 4. We're told, be anxious for nothing. Now we're all these problems and difficulties and these struggles, but yet be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication give thanksgiving. Let your requests be made known to God, and the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. Do you see that happen every time immediately that you pray? I don't. Not immediately. It's not like I'm worried about something and then I pray about it and all of a sudden it just goes away. So many times it's what we end up with, the answer we end up with is, okay, you want this problem to go away. Well, Danny, here you go. Here's what will make this problem go away. Here's the answer. Now, Mr. Armstrong, I heard say one time, God will not do anything for you that you can do for yourself. Anybody else ever hear that quote? Why? Have you ever thought about why? Because, you know, if you take a child and you baby them around, and sometimes, you know, as mothers and even as fathers, you might tend to baby your child around a little bit. And there comes a point that you go, boy, I'm going to have to step back. I'm coddling and babying him too much. He's got to learn how to do this on his own, or she's got to learn how to do this on her own. You know, we're raising kids at my house, and hopefully as a church we're doing this, to be adults who can handle their own lives. We want to be able to hand them gradually to themselves. Now, I wanted Dane to get his driver's license permit on his 15th birthday. Why? Because we want him to have drive. We want him to have a goal. And that day, the very first day that he could get it, that's when we wanted to get it. Not wait. Let's don't wait 6 months because we're scared. Let's have a goal. It's an exciting thing. It's a reward. And so we made it a point that the day he turned 15, we wanted to go get that permit. Doesn't mean we had to, but That's an accomplishment. And I notice kids in this day and time, and I don't know how many kids you've been around, a lot of kids in this day and time, they don't even want to go get it. They put it off. They keep putting it off. And I've known kids 16, 17, 18 years old who don't have even their permit. It's like they don't want it. And it seems that kids are growing up slower and not wanting the responsibility. I want Dane to have that responsibility early so that he has time to establish his footing before he's out there on his own. And so, you know, at 15 and 0 days, that gives me that many more days to spend with him, talking to him about how he thinks when he's driving, what he does, his point of view that he looks at everything from. You know, we talk about depression, we talk about a little about anxiety becoming a key, those key terms. How many times years ago did you hear people talk about depression and anxiety? Now, it's probably one of the most diagnosed illnesses, if you will, that there is out there. And, you know, has depression and anxiety just been invented? Or has it always been around? It's just now we've labeled it as something. You know, the old country music singer Waylon Jennings had a song called "I've Always Been Crazy." And his line in there was, "I've always been crazy, but it kept me from going insane." And that's how some people use their craziness, is to keep them. They say, "Well, I'm a little crazy, so I'm going to just be real crazy." People sometimes ignore their problems, and they pick crazy as a way of escape. Let me just go and do whatever I can find and not think about whatever problem or difficulty that I have, and to not have to change who I am and what I'm doing to forget about all of this stuff. So if I fill it with more stuff, then maybe I won't think about all the stuff that I need to be thinking about. James chapter 1 and verse 5, James 1 and verse 5 gives us the alternative to the way of thinking there. Instead of choosing crazy, there's another word that is the theme of the book of Proverbs, and it is the key to not being crazy. I'll go out and say it's the key to mental health. It's the key to so many things and blessings in life. And maybe, quite possibly, one of the most important, at least in the very top few most important things that we can have, and it's underrated. Verse 5, if any of you lacks wisdom, how to think. You know, wisdom is how to think. If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask of God, who gives to all liberally and without reproach, and it will be given to him. Wisdom. Wisdom solves problems. Wisdom fixes situations. Wisdom puts the power of God, the mind of God, into your hands and says, "Here you go. Here's how you do it." If Dane gets his permit and I sit in the driver's seat and I say, "Here's how you do it, bud. You see, I go around this curve, watch me. Hey, it's good, wasn't it? I'm good at this, ain't I? Watch me slow down here. Watch me stop. Watch me, Dane. Watch me do this. Watch me do that." But he sits in the passenger seat. What does he learn? Yet when we switch seats, and I put the power, as God does to us so many times, puts the power in our hands and says, "If you want this problem solved, here's how you solve it. Here's how you do it. I'm not doing it for you. You do it." I'll show you how, and then I'll hand it to you, and you do it. And it's a gradual learning. When we first pulled out onto the road, the first time, when we left the driver's license station, and yes, I did flip him the keys on the way out and say, here you go. It was a little uneasy. It was uneasy for him. It was uneasy for us, especially Beverly and Lineland. And I told everyone, I said, no one say a word, because I was just afraid. And Lineland, I said, nobody say a word. Let me tell him what to do. So that it, because if everybody panics and you've got three different people telling somebody a different move to make, then what do they do? You know? So if we're going to wreck, it's going to be my fault the first time, because someone has to be given direction. And there has to be that first time. And a couple of days later, we're in the car and Lineland says, am I allowed to speak now? And I said, well, yeah, it wasn't that you weren't allowed to talk at all. It's I didn't want anybody giving him direction or saying, don't do that or don't do this. And I could see, you know, Lineland, as her and Dane would go back and forth, where she might start trying to tell Dane how to drive, you know, and it could get really confusing. But it's important that he hold the wheel, just as it's important that we hold the wheel. And so our mental health then begins to influence our physical actions and what we do. You know, we are taught. Don't think this is not true. We are taught how to think. Someone taught you how to think. If your mom was afraid, was scared to death of spiders, well, you had to decide if you're going to be scared to death of spiders too and run away screaming. Well, I saw mom run away screaming. So they must be scary and they must be dangerous. So you may tend to say, yeah, me too. I'm going to, you know, and what little kid, tiny little kid sees their big strong dad, you know, afraid of a mouse and takes off running. And the little kid goes, I'll kill it, you know, or I'll get it out of here. That doesn't generally happen. And so our influences of our people that we looked up to make such a difference. You know, so many people, have you ever heard people say, don't tell me what to think? You can't tell me what to think. Yet God spends his whole time, most time in the Bible, teaching us and telling us what to think. It makes a lot of sense why mankind doesn't want to follow God and why the carnal mind is enmity or hostile against God, because don't tell me what to think. People will let you tell them what to do before they'll let you tell them what to think. Someone did tell you what to think, either subliminally or outright. They told you growing up, here's what to think. Here's how you handle this. When some guy walks up to you and says, if you punch him right in the nose. Why? Because the thought process to get to that is this guy's against you, and what you have to do is you have to get revenge or you have to take action. Someone else says, well, you know, if someone tries to take from you, you just lay it down and give it and run off crying and screaming. We learned our behaviors by watching others and by how we were taught. Several years ago, I was doing business development for a staffing company. A couple interesting conversations that I got into. One was a guy that owned or was a head supervisor for one of the big factories, worked several hundred people. And he said, you know, one of the things that I find anymore is that I'm not able to find people who know how to work. They don't know how to work. He said, you know, we brought people in and we would train them on a job. And so, you know, as Mr. Vaughn probably relate to this, being in a factory, you know, there's lots of different jobs in this factory. And as long as you can set your mind to work and do it, you can go over here and learn this project, and you can go over here and learn this project, and you can go over here and learn how to do this line. It may take a few minutes, but you're not teaching someone work ethic. Work ethic being a mental decision. I'm going to commit myself. I'm going to do this. I'm going to pay attention. I'm going to be safe. I'm going to get in here. I'm going to find the most efficient way to do this. He said, We're not teaching people how to do a job anymore. He said, we're teaching people how to work. He said, people that come to us now, he said, they don't know how to, they've never swept a floor. They've never done any work. He said, they don't know, it's not they don't know how to do the job, they don't know how to work. If they sweep for 5 minutes, they go, what is this? This hurts my arm. You know, this is, they're not trained to work. One other conversation that I had, and it shows the power of family influence and what we're taught and how we're taught to live and how we're taught to do things, was a guy that was a head over one of these financial lending places. And he said, there's several different institutions, he said, in this town. And this was actually in Crossville. He said, there's this one over here, this lending place and this lending place, and that, you know, all these payday lenders. He said, we all have the same customers. He said, these guys go over here and they pay us off by borrowing money from them. And then they borrow money over here to pay us off. And he said, I'll tell you what we see. Most of the time, he said, we see grandma, then we see mom, then we see son and daughter. He said, once this gets in a family, it stays in the family. He said, that's our customers, their family relationships. They're, you know, mom taught how to do this, or grandma taught how to do this. Mom followed her, and now daughter is following her. And what's going to happen to granddaughter? And we see the interesting comparison in Scripture that talks about the sins of the fathers visiting to the third and fourth generations. We don't change our thinking, then our kids don't change their thinking, then their kids don't change their thinking, and so on and so forth. And yet we see why God says once we change, then these blessings come. Once we change and change what we teach. Changing your attitude is the key, and maybe the most important key, to mental health. Changing your attitude. You know, what do you mean, change my attitude? When you were growing up and you had to go do dishes, you know, if your parents came in sometime to you and said, you're going to do those dishes and you're going to like it. If you did that, and if they said, get that smirk off your face and put a smile on your face, get that rid of that attitude. If they told you that and you did it, you can do that. And you know that you can do that. If they didn't tell you that and you didn't do it, then you don't know that you can change your attitude. Changing our attitude means changing our thinking. Changing our thinking means changing our mental health. God expects us to change our thinking. The Bible is a book of mental health, and ultimately will be the key to all mankind's mental health and stability. Deuteronomy 6. Even when we look back, ancient writings, Deuteronomy 6, verse 1, now this is the commandment, and these are the statutes and judgments which the Lord your God has commanded to teach you, that you may observe them in the land when you are crossing over, which you are crossing over to possess. That you may fear. Is fear a thought process? Is that a cognitive thing or is that a physical thing? So, teaching thought, how we either choose to fear or not fear, right? We decide we're going to fear this or we're not going to fear it. So it's a cognitive, it's a thought process. That you may fear the Lord your God to keep all his statutes. Now, when we think keep, we think physical. We think, you know, keep the Sabbath, go to church on the Sabbath. You know, don't steal. Don't cheat. don't physically do these things. Keep his statutes and his commandments, which I command you, you and your son and your grandson, all the days of your life, and that your days may be prolonged. Notice he mentions your son and your grandson. So everyone that you have authority over, that you are in jurisdiction over, you're the father or the grandfather, you know, you mother, grandmother, even aunts and uncles, if you have that ability, you're in a jurisdiction and a leadership role. And so we're teaching. Verse 3, therefore, hear, O Israel, and be careful to observe it, that it may be well with you. So we're teaching the thought, we're teaching the action. And then he says, if you do these, you teach the thought and you teach the action, then it's going to be well with you. So we change the thought, we change the action, and it may be well with you, that you may multiply greatly, as the Lord God of your fathers has promised you, a land flowing with milk and honey. And then he goes on, verse 4, hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Verse 5, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart. Heart, meaning thought, our point of view, where we stand, how we look at God, how we look at, with all your soul and with all your strength. So it's a mental thing. It's a heart feeling, how we feel, and it's also an action with our strength. And the words, this is the key point here, the words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You know, God was teaching ancient Israel how to think as well. And so we then have been given this special gift of God's Spirit to help us change our minds. It's a spirit of a sound mind, we're told. And he goes on and gives us this, and I always think about this scripture. It's one of my favorite scriptures in the Bible. When I start to think about how you are to be a parent, what are we to do? Can we overdo it? Can we overteach? Can we overexplain? Can we over? You shall teach them diligently. To your children, and shall talk to them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. That's all the time. That's any time you see something that needs to be taught that you can feasibly insert into the lives of those that you have influence over. Yet, let's take a moment and back up there. Watching an episode of The Waltons. We like to watch The Waltons. Anybody ever watch The Waltons? Well, there was a new doctor came to town. If anybody ever saw this episode. The old doctor, he wasn't making enough money to pay the bills. He had to move to find work. And new doctor came to town. He had been working in the coal mines. His job was a coal mining town doctor. Had no tact whatsoever. So when anybody came to him, and the one lady came to him, and she said, "Well, my rheumatory arthritis it is bothering my feet." And he said, "Well, I'll tell you, the problem is you're too fat." And, you know, he had no tact. He just couldn't. She said, "Well, Dr. So and so, he wrote me a prescription for pain." He said, "Get you some different shoes and quit eating so much." And walks out. And you know, and he's the whole town's turning against him because he has no tact of how he says things. So we do have to find that, you know, as we're teaching, and again, if we apply wisdom to how we teach and we learn to understand others and each other, it's not to take a pass. It's to say, "Well, I don't understand how to teach, so I'm just going to keep my mouth shut." We all have something to teach because we are being trained. And he says in verse 8, "You shall bind them," and now just after telling to teach your children, he tells you, teach them laws. But then he goes to says, "You shall bind them as a sign on your hand," what we do, and the frontlets between your eyes, what we think. So we're not just teaching our kids what to do. We're teaching them how to think. explain in situations, have you ever thought about this? Have you ever thought about what happens when this happens? Have you ever tried this way? Have you ever tried thinking about it or looking at it this way? Mental health is a learned behavior. Mental health is a learned behavior. I asked Google, what's the most effective treatment for anxiety and depression? Just curious what Google would say. And Google says, CBT. What's CBT? Cognitive Behavioral Therapy. What's that? So I looked up, what is cognitive behavioral therapy? Now you would think, with all of science and all the medications and everything that's going on in this world, you would think, oh, let's say, oh, this so-and-so prescription. No. It's changing your thinking. The world itself, and all of this, it's science and research and everything. The doctors, the Mayo Clinic says the most effective treatment for mental problems, for mental issues, and to treat mental health is learning how to change your thinking. I wonder if God knew that. The problem is how they get you to change your thinking is somewhat different sometimes. And it goes self, 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 me, 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 me. Do what makes you happy. Follow your heart. You know, when if you want to think about what God says about follow your heart, he says the heart's deceitful and desperately wicked above all things. Who can know it? Well, that's a little different than what the world teaches us to follow our heart. How we think impacts, or it should at least impact, what we do then. So if we establish that we change our thinking, well, we can know all things. We can have all knowledge, all wisdom. And yet, if we don't practice that word love, which is the action word, what we do and the giving, and we begin to use that, then we find that that's not very profitable to us. If we just know all things and we keep them to ourselves, we sit on them, then what? You know, it's interesting that Christ, when he magnified the commandments, made sure that we understood that the commandments are not just what you do. It's how you think. He said, it's said don't look at a woman. And that's well and good. Don't look at a woman to lust after her. But don't even think about it. Don't sit and dwell on that, because as the mind goes, so follows the body so many times. James chapter 2. Verse 18. I made sure to wear my watch today that it's stuck in the old time that before the time went up an hour, so that gives me an extra hour to continue if I run out of time. I can't change the time. It's the button's messed up, so my other watch battery's dead, so I threw this one on, and I got to keep reminding myself it's an hour back. So if I go over an hour, you'll know why, Mr. Jones. That's I'm joking. Where were we? James 2. James says, but someone will say, you have faith and I have works. Show me your faith without your works, and I will show you my faith by my works. You believe that there is one God, you do well. Even the demons believe and tremble. But do you want to know, O foolish man, what faith? That faith without works is dead. So we get all this faith and knowledge, and it's, we're fired up inside about doing something, and we believe the truth, we know the truth, and He says, was not Abraham, our father, justified by works when he offered Isaac, his son, on the altar? Abraham did that out of obedience, but it was something that he actually had to physically do. It wasn't enough for Abraham. It wasn't enough to just say, well, I will. Any more than it's enough for me to say, Dane, watch me drive and learn how to drive. And then when you're 18, get out of my house and go drive on your own. Till then, I'll do all the driving, and you just sit over and keep your mouth shut and just do what I say. See, it's a transition. And I have a good plan for him, by the way, too. So we're mostly in the car. You know, we've graduated a little. He's drove the SUV. Next, we're going to 5-speed F-250. And then I've got a box truck. So I told him I'm going to make him take his driver's test in this big box truck. So if we can get him to that point, then from that point on, he may have to be on his own. He may have to learn how to drive 18-wheeler or something like that on his own. Because I don't have one of those. But I've been joking with him about that box truck because it's pretty wide. I'm telling him I'm going to let him take his driver's test in the box truck. Hebrews 13, verse 16. Hebrews 13, verse 16. But do not forget to do good and to share. You know, mental health is one of the most important. If that's one of the biggest things that we have going, problems that we have going in this nation, share. For with such sacrifices, God is well pleased. If we share the way to happiness, the little things, the little tricks and the little techniques, and care about other people and show that we're there when need to be, then we are able to help with mental health. Again, who has perfect mental health? Therefore, that's why we need each other. We need to be honest with each other. We need to help each other. We need to work through we may need help loading a load of wood. It's a different thing. We may need help, you know, changing a flat tire because we're on the side of the road. But, you know, what about all the struggles and the problems and those types of things that we have? That's the kind of stuff that we really, really need each other for. You know, any dumb old burly guy can help you change a tire. But, you know, you go start talking to a guy about, how do I work out this problem in my marriage? How do I solve this problem in my family? Have you seen this? What do you do? How do I fix these things in here that I go home with every day? The problems and the difficulties and the struggles. How do I have more faith? How is it you do it? How do you, and you'll probably find out that everyone else is not as perfect either at it. But those are the things we guard and we hide, aren't they? You know, we can't. My mom's brother made a poor decision, or I guess someone else actually made a poor decision when he was about 16 years old and ran a crane up his arm and took it off right here. He has no arm from here down. And you know, we can see that. You can see that. If you see a guy with one arm struggling because he's trying to do something, you say, hey, let me give you a hand of that if you need. You know, you need a hand of that? Pretty easy to see. But we don't see the spiritual struggles, the mental struggles. And, they're basically one and the same. We can call them mental struggles, mental health, or we can call it spiritual health or spiritual struggles. We don't see those. And it takes a pretty close relationship with someone before someone will start to even tell us that. So first we have to practice good friendship, and being there for each other and in sometimes physical ways, and gaining trust that we don't break. And then learning to become closer as family and as friends and to work together on these things. But we can't just say, I'll just be glad when God's kingdom gets here. It'll go. It'll all be better. Because we are learning right now what we're going to need to be teaching. So if we just, you know, hit fast forward and go through all the this stuff, well, what we have here is still going to be the same with no learning, no difference, and we're not going to be growing and any rewards. Another little movie clip that I watched years ago was a story about a guy who found a special remote control, and he could fast forward through parts of his life that he didn't want to have to deal with. And what he found was that as he fast forwarded through the parts of his life he didn't want to deal with, he also missed special moments and things like that when someone had a special event, a graduation or a wedding, because he was trying to get past it. He was trying to get to this next spot. He wanted to get to this next spot. He was, and so, yeah, we have to keep our eyes on the kingdom, but we have to realize that that's a journey. It's not a, you know, teleport button that we go, well, if I just sit back and close my eyes and just pray for God's kingdom, well, maybe it'll just come. And I don't have to, you know, just hunker down. That's not what God expects us to do. We have to be active and learning and doing. That's what we're told. Don't forget to do good and to share. Don't grow weary and well-doing, we're told. It's really easy to do when we see things falling apart. But if we get our minds off of ourselves and begin to help each other, we find out that others begin to help us. And what's it create? It creates this back and forth type of a relationship that's what we're supposed to have. You know, physical health and mental health often go hand in hand. You've heard the old saying, you are what you eat. And I'll go a step farther and say, you are what you think. But the world has began to say, well, you can, if you think it, dream it, you can be it, right? But you know, really, what it means, and we say, if we say we are what we think, it's we are what we think about. If we think self, we're selfish. If we think only about what we want or what we don't consider what others need and what, then we are what we think. Self, self, self. 1 Timothy 4 and verse 8. First Timothy 4, verse 8. And I don't think this is meant to at all to belittle physical exercise. You know, different translations kind of translate this a little bit differently, but verse 8 says, for bodily exercise profits a little. And so I think it's what it's saying is it has some value. Physical exercise, you know, you say, oh, it just profits a little. Well, don't exercise. Just sit on the couch, eat potato chips, everything will be good. No, it profits a little. But godliness is profitable for all things. So in comparison, you know, and if we realize just how important, again, physical health, okay, just as cognitive behavioral therapy is so important to mental health, go ask any well-meaning doctor, hey doc, what should I do? My blood pressure is getting up a little bit. Start walking. Change your diet. Lose 10 pounds. You know, my mom's husband, they told him, said, she said, his blood pressure, said, doctor said, if you'll walk 5 minutes a day, that will change that. 5 minutes a day, you know. Bodily exercise is important. It's as important to physical health as how we think and what we do and our attitudes and actions mentally are to our mental health. So, again, I don't think it's belittling. And we know that God believes in us taking care of ourselves and how we deal with our bodies. But godliness, how we think, again, the comparison, physical versus mental, is profitable in all things, having promise of the life that what? It says that now is and of which is to come. So again, you know, it's not hit the button, teleport to the kingdom. Let's put it on hold. Let's build walls around us and let's secure ourselves in. You know, Christ even prayed, I don't want to take them out of the world. We got to live in the world. And so we have to learn how to solve problems in this mess that we're in. And if we throw our hands up and say, it's useless, nothing I can do. Well, then we're right. If you think you can, or if you think you can't, you're right. There's a guy that I saw giving a motivational speech one time. He said, my dad used to tell us, he said, if you aim high and miss, I'm okay with that. But if you aim low and hit, I'm not okay with that. You know, it's our goal has to be success. That we can help the situations that we're in. We can do it. We can believe. We should believe. We have to believe. If not, again, we have to hit pause, wait for the kingdom, and yes, we're right. It is true. When God's kingdom comes, lots of problems are going to be taken care of. But if we can somehow now find a way to prevent or to remedy or to help with some of those issues, how much better is, as this says, the life that now is going to be. Taking good care of ourselves is a key to how we feel and to how we think. You know, good diet is another one of the things that they'll give you that actually affects your mental health. You know, they'll tell you, watch what you eat. Don't be eating too much sugar or too much of this or too much that. And I've found that to be true myself. I'm sure many of you all have too. If you've ever gone through a period in life where you kind of started changing your diet for some reason, you find, well, I feel better. I mean, boy, when we went to Passover and I'd been eating pretty good, and here, you know Valerie Vaughn, you remember, you know her, brought these big scotcheroos up there and I only ate about 12 of them. Well, it took me a few days to get over that. I mean, because they're there and it's a feast. I mean, it was a feast, right? You know, so I mean, after all, you got to eat what's there. It can't be. How can you say no to something that's right there in front of you when it's been made specifically for you for a feast? So, but changing that diet and start to eat a little bit different, eating sugar and, you know, there's a handful of jelly beans and you know, then this and then that, it kind of starts to weigh on you. And so physical health, you know, and your mental health kind of go hand in hand. You kind of start to feel a little more sluggish. Well, the more sluggish you feel, you know, it kind of affects that gives you that kind of mental fog, how much we sleep, how we take care of ourselves and all that. But also on the flip side, our mental health can affect how we feel physically. If we're dealing with so many problems and we're in this hopeless situation, stress begins to become an issue. You know, people, they'll talk about that. Limit your stress. If you want to improve your physical health, limit your stress. You know what? That stresses a lot of people out because you tell them to limit their stress. Well, how am I supposed to limit my stress? Well, there again, the Bible's full of techniques and how we do things to help solve problems, solving problems and people being able to fix things and stand on their own two feet. You know, most of our worries are about other people, aren't they? I mean, there are some about us, but we worry about others. We worry about our kids and grandkids and family members, and we worry about those things. And then we worry about how somebody comes at us, maybe at work or different types of things. And it takes wisdom to know how to deal with each one of these situations. Paul said, I'm all things to all people. You know, what does he mean? He's able to pretty much, you know, duck and roll. He knows when to throw the punch. He knows when to get out of the way. He knows when to talk about this over here. He knows when to talk about this over here. He knows how to come to people and how to approach people and how to insert himself in conversations and how to relate to different people and different. All of that's wisdom. We learn those things through wisdom and through care about being able to. You know, if you've ever set your mind to do something and determined, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I mean, have you ever fixed your mind on something that you said, I am going to do this? If you've done that and hit a goal, then you realize that that drive and that perseverance that you've set for yourself is what makes it happen. If we say, well, I might one day, we're probably not going to. We have to determine that we're going to before we can go and do whatever it is that we're going to do. You know, one quick thing is that, again, I said, you know, diet affects depression and anxiety and mental stamina as well as our physical health. You know, food and drink sometimes become, whether it be alcohol or too much sugar or too much of whatever it is that we're eating, become a thing, you know, comfort food. You know, we're real bad for that in the South. We like our comfort food. We like our fried chicken and our biscuits and gravy, and who don't, you know? But they become a thing that we kind of feed. There's something about, I'm sure everybody can relate to this, there's something about when you just don't feel great, well, you just want to eat something that tastes good. You know, it kind of works together. It's like, oh, I just ain't feeling that great. I'm just had a bad time. Let's go get something to eat. Let's go out to a restaurant. Let's go get a big steak. It always makes you feel better until you get back in the car and you got to drive home and your belt is pushing against your belly. Anybody else ever have to loosen the belt a little bit? But mostly guys I'm talking to on that. I've done that plenty of times, you know, and it's not as, it's almost a letdown. It's not as comfortable as we thought. You know, it felt good at the time, but food and drink can become those types of things, just the same as alcohol. I was talking to a lady the other day who was talking about her struggles with diet and how she'd had weight loss surgery and been able to, and turned around and put back on. And she said, I've got to stop. I've realized that I've gained half back of what I lost because I realized I could still eat these certain things. And so now I'm back to eating those things. And she said, changing the physical didn't fix it. She has to now change the same thing that she was going to have to change in the beginning. Without changing the mind, it didn't change anything. Good health frees us up to think clearly. Proverbs 17, verse 22. Proverbs 17, 22, and I'm going to move through these pretty fast. A merry heart does good. A merry heart does good, like medicine. But a broken spirit dries the bones. So we see the opposite of how not just the physical health makes the mental health better, but then the mental health affects the physical health. If we have a broken spirit, and what causes a broken spirit? Unsolvable problem. We fought for something, we fought for it, and it's crushed. If God gives us the wisdom to see how to solve this problem, all of a sudden this begins to change. And if we lose our hope and we become hopeless, then we find that we end up with that broken spirit. Proverbs chapter 4, 23. So many little keys in Proverbs that if you just ponder on them. Keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it spring the issues of life. Or guard your heart. Guarding our heart, meaning don't get into things and surround ourselves with all kinds of nonchalantly with all kinds of issues and problems, going along with those problems. You go along with problems, they become less important to you. Have you ever noticed that? If you allow something to happen, it's harder to say no to it the next time. And then the next time, you've turned your head and you've let something go. You've turned your head again, you've let something go. And then you've got to find a way to stand up to something. You know, the Sabbath is a good example of that. How, you know, someone may skate a little on the Sabbath at work or take the easy route to say, well, I won't mention the Sabbath. And then the next time the Sabbath comes up again. And then what happens is you have to stand up for it and they say, well, why didn't you tell me about this way back then? Or you have to deal with a certain person and you've let some kind of attitude go that you didn't say, hey, wait a second, you know, this is not going to be okay. You haven't dealt with these things, and they tend to get worse. You know, bullies tend to be that way a lot. If you don't tell a bully, hey, no, then they tend to take from you again and take from you again and take from you again. And so if you catch things in the beginning, a lot of times it tends to solve problems, or they grow and they get bigger. So if we keep our heart and we don't surround ourselves and let ourselves be in all these bad situations, you know, Christ said in one place, he told them, think not. He said, don't think that I am come to destroy the law and the prophets. And yet, that's what most of religion does. They think so. He said, think not, they think so. Changes your whole point of view. Changes your whole foundation of mentally where you stand and how you look at everything. So that base that you're coming from is a different one. Philippians 4. Philippians chapter 4 and verse 1 says, therefore, my beloved and longed for brethren, my joy and crown, so stand fast in the Lord, beloved. He goes on to talk here about Euodia and Syntyche, who must have been in some kind of an argument. And it doesn't give us a lot of information, but he felt it important. You notice how that it was important enough to address this problem. If there's a difficulty, if there's a butting of heads, and he says, I implore them to be of the same mind. And then he goes on to say, and I urge you also, true companion, help these women who labored with me in the gospel. Don't let this situation just sit there and fester and boil and get worse and worse and worse. That's what he's saying. With Clement also, and the rest of my fellow workers whose names are in the book of life. He knew that this would cause a bigger problem. This needs to be solved. And it's not just tell them. Someone needs to tell them, and someone needs to be helping them. We need to get this problem taken care of. And then he goes on to say, after that, rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I say rejoice. Let your gentleness be known to all. The Lord is at hand. And then back to verse 6 where he says, be anxious for nothing. And in verse 7, and the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. You notice it's interesting. He says, work out this problem. Get this problem out of the way. He's not just saying, oh, everybody have joy. Let's all just stand up and have joy and leave. No, he says, there's problems. You got to work these problems out. Then he pronounces a blessing on them of joy. And then he goes in verse 8, finally, brethren, and tells them then how to think. He begins to tell them what things to think of. How do you position yourself in life? How do you come at things? What point of view are we to look at things from? Where we look at things from makes all the difference. Our vantage point, where we stand, makes all the difference in how we handle situations. He says, finally, brethren, whatever things are true, so we're supposed to look at the truth. Is this a true? What is true in this situation? Again, all of this is wisdom to find out what's true. What is the truth? Well, I just can't know. No, we have to find out what is true the best that we can. What's true? What things are just, fair? What's fair in this situation? How do we go forth in this situation? What is fair? What's true, what's just, what's fair. What things are pure. Am I looking at this from the right heart? Am I in this for the right reason? What's the pure way? We got to get it down to the nitty gritty. Let's cut it down to what it actually is. Let's get rid of all the lies and the confusion and everything else. Let's cut it down to the nitty gritty and let's find out what it is. All what things are pure. If there is any virtue, if there is anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things. So we're supposed to be looking at every situation to find the truth in it. The things which you learned and received and heard and saw in me, these do, and what? And the God of peace will be with you. So it's not, God's just not going to say, here, have peace, because we say, God, give us peace. No, he says, these things that you heard and saw in me, do them. So we change our thinking, then we have to do these things. Verse 10, but I rejoiced in the Lord greatly that now at last your care for me has flourished again, though you surely did care, but you lacked opportunity. Verse 11 and 12 say, not that I speak in regard to need, for I have learned in whatever state I am, he says, to be content. I know how to be abased, and I know how to abound. He learned how to mentally deal with whatever problem and difficulty that is coming at him, and yet he's still looking at, telling him he's got to look at truth, he's got to look at what's pure and what's just. And Paul has learned how to do this in whatever situation he's in. Everywhere and in all things I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. Well, that's how we do it. Is we have to break them down to what something really is and look at it for what it really is and then deal with it where we can and be acceptant of the things that we can't change. Contentment is not feeding our needs constantly. That's not contentment. Contentment is learning how to do without our needs. Practicing self-control. One of those fruits of the Spirit is self-control. And self-control means that we have to take control of our thoughts and our action. Knowing and not doing, you know, as we talked about earlier, we talked about how he says, do these things. You know, knowing and not doing feeds a problem. It feeds guilt. How many times have you ever had a regret? I wish I would have done that. Why? It was because you knew to do something, but you didn't do it. You know, you have to do it in the time that it, when it, you know, you've heard about the should haves. Well, I should have done this and I should have done that. That's what we're telling us, is don't do those things. And if we have some of those should haves, let's go back and try to fix some of those should haves. Proverbs chapter 1. Final scripture. In verse 2. I'm going to leave you this because mental health, again, involves wisdom. Our problem with how we think is how we think. Our problem with how we think is how we think. Wisdom is knowing how to think. To know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding. Yeah. Does this sound like God's just going to solve our problem for us? No, he's going to give us the answers so that we then in turn can go and apply the answers and solve things. If he solves it for us, there's no wisdom in that. He has the wisdom, but God's Spirit is so that he can impart things to us, not so that he does it for us. To receive instruction of wisdom, justice. Again, we talk about what Paul was talking about, truth, justice, judgment, and equity. To give prudence to the simple, and to the young man knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and increase learning, and a man of understanding will attain wise counsel. our mental health and our physical action leads to our spiritual health.